accession number 23370 REL 20.
How was that organised in relation to who would go first?
According to health, that was the sickest people. Of course, they were picked up first and put on planes and got out. Some went direct back to Australia. Some went to other places. I was taken to Moratai, which is in North Borneo, and then put on the hospital ship to go home. But a lot of the troops, those who were reasonably fit and could stand it, were put on ships and sent home on troop ships. But the worst were picked up straight away, and they were got rid of very quickly. They got home, you know, quite quickly. A lot of the English, of course, they took a lot longer to get home. We were relatively close, but the English, they took quite some time to get home, as I understand it. And the Americans, of course, there was no trouble at all to them. They were hijacked straight away and shot home because there was only, it wasn't a great number of them. There would have been a thousand in there, or started off would have been a thousand in their artillery unit, and another 300-400 in from the Houston. So there wasn't a great number for them to get home. But there were, as far as I'm aware, there was only the odd Canadian and that sort of people. Generally it was Australians, English and Americans, plus the Dutch. But of course they were just going back to Java. That was all they had to traverse to get home. But we were taken to Moratai, and Moratai we picked up with the operating army, if you like, and it was a different world. We had become a thing of the past as far as our knowledge of the army was concerned. Or of the services were concerned. The hospital that I went into was only a tent hospital, but it had everything in it. And people no longer walked anywhere. They got into jeeps and ran everywhere. There were a couple of us were picked up. We'd been given a medical examination, and we were mainly more down on vitamins and that sort of thing, and we were given malarial treatment and that sort of thing. But physically we were weak and down, but still capable of carrying on. And a couple of us were abducted in these jeeps and taken out into the battlefield, you know, where they'd been doing their fighting, and it was a different world completely. You know. The language the blokes used, methods you had of getting around, the uniforms were different. A lot of it was Americanized, gaiters and that sort of thing. Boots, the uniforms, everything was absolutely different, and we were yonks behind. We were years behind. The old Australian Army uniform that had been there was obsolete. Everything had been changed, colours, And it was quite a bit of a shock, really.
Seeing the Americans, how did you sort of feel towards them in relation to their role in bringing about the end of the war? Given the fact that you'd gone away to fight for king and country.
There was a... I was going to say animosity, but it's not animosity. It was the vast change that had come about in the way warfare was conducted was something that was quite difficult to grasp, and because it was completely, or not completely new, but it was a newer way of doing things, and you were just completely bamboozled by it, if you like. It was just so difficult to pick up all in one big hit. It was just too much to absorb, so you were absolutely bamboozled by it. It was quite hard to comprehend and to see, you know, the things that they had done and the changes that were taking place and the methods of doing things, bringing people ashore in off boats and that sort of thing was so vastly different. Everything had been completely mechanised, and this was shown up by the fact that nobody walked anywhere, got in these bloody jeeps and went everywhere, you know, they were all over the place. What had been something that was always taught to be careful with was the amount of petrol you used and this sort of thing, but boy, it was no problem with them, you know, the way they were going with it. But it was a whole it was a whole change in everything.
How did they see you, do you think?
The Yanks. I never had very much to do with them. When we came out, because we were always with the Australian Army, whether or wherever it was looking after you. But the attitude to the Americans, as far as we were concerned, was you know, very tolerant and good on them. They did a good job. But the Americans, as far as we were concerned. Oh yes, they're always very friendly and you know, that sort of thing, regarded us as pretty good blokes.
What then of the process of coming home? Had you heard anything recently from home?
No, I'd had another two letters from home, but there was nothing very much in them because of restrictions, censorship, and that sort of thing. People were very careful what they wrote about. So there was only news from home was you know, just the usual sort of stuff that your sister was doing this, or there was some indications that your elder brother still isn't home, which meant that he was. He was up in Korea being a prisoner as well, so you know, that was quite a thing. The other brother was still floating around. He was the one who was in the Navy as well. But, as I say, it was quite overwhelming to come out of it all and come into this... high-powered world that had taken place while we were away. But we stayed in Waratah for a couple of days, and then we were put onto the Whanganui, which was a hospital ship, and then we came home to Sydney via Brisbane. It was a pleasant interlude. Didn't take long, but when we got to Sydney, of course the Navy grabbed us then and took us over to the depot, and you were picked up in the car, you know, which was absolutely unheard of before we'd gone away. But there was quite a strange incident. Prior to the ship going down, they had drafted some more sailors on board from one of the ships, and then had taken some from our ship and were sending them elsewhere. And I had been in one of these drafts, and considering I'd been on the ship since the day I had come back from the Mediterranean, we'd been doing all the work of de-ammunitioning ship and went through the process of working it while it was in dock, etc. And then when it's all ready to go to sea and start and do the bizzo that you joined up for, they wanted to send you somewhere else. So I went to the our quarters officer and said to him, do I have to go? Can I get out of the draft? And he said, well, so long as you can find somebody to swap with from your own mess, cope your life. So I went back to the mess and I talked to a couple of blokes, and one of them, Lindsay Wiltshire, a bloke from Adelaide, he said, yeah, he said, I don't mind. He said, I'll do it. So he went to the Benora, and I stayed on the Perth. Now, the day that I walked into that depot, he came up and spoke to me. He was in the depot at the time, and he was the first bloke that I spoke to. And he said to me, God, he said, I worried about that, you know, about you being sunk, etc. He said, I worried the daylights out of me. It worried me too, you know. But it was quite strange that he was there right at that moment. It was quite amazing. But
what was the feeling to know that you were on your way home to Australia, and then what was it like to actually see Australia on the horizon?
Oh, it was very good. It was something that you'd been looking forward to, and crikey, it couldn't come quick enough. But
the atmosphere on board ship?
There were a lot of people on board ship that weren't prisoners. They had, you know, wounded people, etc. Very happy to be coming home, because whatever reason you were coming home, that was it. You were on your way home, and it was a good thing to be doing, rather than staying where you were doing what you had been doing. So it was quite a big thing. But we got to Sydney, and I couldn't get a flight to Perth. So I had to stay, it was 2 days, 3 days. And I went and I was billeted out to a Mrs. Irene Pacey up in Vaucluse, I think it was, in Sydney. And they were marvellous people. Took me around everywhere and showed me every kindness and courtesy and fed me like a royal duke. But eventually got onto this this plane. And of course, in those days, the planes didn't fly right across Australia. They had to do it in bits. So we flew to Adelaide, and the Red Cross had got some tickets to a theatre for us, and we went to the theatre that night and saw this play, and then the next day back on the plane again, and then finally got back home to WA. And there lies a coincidence. My elder brother had been up in Korea. He had, when the release had come up there, he had been given the option by the Russians to go home via Russia, go home through Moscow, etc. A bit of a PR thing, but wasn't quick enough for Bill. So he went back to the Yanks, and they got him. We're down as far as Manila. They got on board. They put him on board one of the aircraft carriers. And the aircraft carrier was going down to Manila, and then they took them from there, carried on with the aircraft carrier down to Darwin, and they got off the ship at Darwin, of course, and he scrambled around and found that there was a one of the BBYs, the Catalinas, coming down to Perth, and so he pushed his way in and got onto the cap, and they brought him down and landed him at Crawley, and of course he got out and he went home, or they took him home, and he arrived home in the morning, and I arrived home in the afternoon. Same day. And of course the Navy was very good, though. When we landed here in Perth, there was a car waiting, and Mum was there, and they were very good, took us all the way home, gave us money and coupons, and said, when you're good and ready, come back and see us. And then left us to it then. That was quite a thing.
Can imagine it must have been a pretty emotional day.
Oh, very much. Very much. Yeah.
Had things changed much in Perth on your return home?
Well, yes, it was different altogether. Everything had been changed by the war. One of the things that you had to catch up on was a lot of the history of what had gone on in those 3.5 years, and the changes that had taken place, because the changes were quite tremendous. Because if you take an example of aircraft, they'd gone from being pretty nifty things to being something that was absolutely out of this world. Bigger, better, faster, smoother, you know, the whole box and dice. And that applied to pretty well to everything as well. Shipping had changed, cars had changed, everything had changed, people's attitudes had changed completely. Far from being a fairly staid sort of population, suddenly it was a real hip population, if you like. It had changed that much. It really had.
But, the presence of the Americans, I assume,
had oh, absolutely, too. Yes, yeah. Because when we came out of Singapore, one of the things that was so, or impressive, I suppose, is a word, is the amount of music that was being played. One of the first songs that I heard was Bing Crosby singing Don't Fence Me In. other things like the Andrews Sisters with the drinking rum and Coca-Cola, and some of the suggestions that were in that were quite ludicrous as far as life had been concerned previously, but it had changed, and they were quite indicative of some of the changes that had taken place. They were quite vast.
Did you have difficulty fitting back into society after your whole experience?
Yes. Yeah.
How long did it take before you could really sort of feel as though you fit into it all?
Well, I would think probably, or 10, 12 years before you really let that all go, before it didn't affect you anymore. Things like nightmares and that sort of thing. You found that you couldn't talk about it very much, because talking about it, if you took on any conversation about it at all, you had to pursue it from beginning to end, because if you had no end, then suddenly you were left in midair. And that produced nightmares. It wasn't I would say that it took a good 10 years to be able to feel as though you were back into normality, in that you could take part and take place in everything without having problems with it.
What was the hardest thing that you had to try and get back into in regards to civilian life, do you think?
Well, I don't know what was the hardest thing. Probably an acceptance of the fact that nobody was going to understand what you had been through, or how difficult it had been, or what problems you were having with getting back into normal society. It was very difficult, because you had problems of your own that when you spoke to one of your mates that had been there, done that sort of thing, they understood straight away. But to anybody else, it was too difficult for them to understand. So frustration would creep in very quickly. That was once you could learn to try and not worry about what you had been through, to leave it go, once you could do that, then you were harmonised, more or less. But
what was the thing that helped you the most to get back into things?
Oh, just being busy, taking on a... I started off as got a job, or took on carpentry. And, of course, once you get your nose into that sort of thing and you've got to earn your living doing it, you've got to accept it and get right into it. That was probably the thing that just by having to earn a earn a living and let go of all this sort of thing and not let it interfere, because that was the thing that it was doing completely for a long time, was interfering. And of course the fact that I got married and was very fortunate to marry a very understanding and a very loving girl, that was the big thing. Without marriage, it would have been lost completely. But the Navy took us back over to Melbourne and took us for about a fortnight of rehabilitation, they called it. But actually it was catching up with history. We had a fortnight there at a place called Grong Grong. It was an individual or a woman's home. It was out in Toorak, a vast mansion of a place. And we were there about 20 at a time, being brought up to date with all the history and all the changes that had taken place, particularly music. This was one of the things that had been, or it was quite amazing as far as we were concerned, because suddenly we had missed all this music, all the Tops of the Pops, or you know, what was the equivalent in those days, and it was something that you needed to catch up on amongst the hundreds of other things that you needed to catch up on. But again, it was a gradual process. You could only catch up on it gradually, because you can only absorb so much, and particularly it, you know, take a thing like music when you're trying to catch up with that, there's so much of it that you only catch up a bit at a time. And so it was with all the other changes that had taken place. They were quite tremendous, so that you had to work hard at it to try and catch up with them.
Do you think you can really ever explain to people what your experience was like?
No. You can give examples, but examples are only a fleeting thing. It was the intensity of it for such a long period, the intensity of it was it was all pervading. It never left you, and you virtually had to be on edge, or you were on edge the whole time. From one cause or another, if it wasn't getting a belt round your ear for something you were doing wrong or perceived to be doing wrong, or whether you were sick, because that sickness was always with you. And I cite particularly the period I went through when I had 9 recurrences of this damn malaria in a short period. It was with you the whole time, and the fear of getting a disease or a wound of some sort that you couldn't treat, it was there. The intensity of it was there the whole time. So to try and portray that to somebody, no way, you can't do it. No matter how hard you try.